corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, Neemwell.com, because here, the expression is still free. It's Thursday, 20th of October, and in this edition, we're taking a look at the rise and rise of the military-industrial complex. We are in trouble, but how far back do the roots of that trouble go? We'll also take a brief look at the case of the senior British military policeman found hanged in Basra last weekend, here on The Next Level on breakfornews.com.
And push me on to the next level.
And this is Fintan Dunn reporting. Thanks for joining us. Thanks also to our sponsor, Neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. Check it out at NEEMWELL.com. Works for me. It'll work for you. And before we begin, let me recommend to you a story in my.breakfornews.com about Judith Miller, Claimgate, and the Birds of a Feather, because there's an interesting question that arises. I'd like to put it to you now. Can you spot the odd one out in this set of individuals? And they are, in this order, Judith Miller, Valerie Plame, Sibelle Edmonds, and Amanda Keller. Can you spot the odd one out? Well, the odd one out is, of course, Valerie Plame, because she's the only one who, as a matter of public record, works for the CIA. Whereas the other three, it's not a matter of public record that they work for the CIA, see? So that makes her the odd one out. You can get more on that and more on the rubbish circulating about the Plamegate affair in my.breakfornews. Now we're going to take quite a broad range back into history tonight to take a look at the roots of the problems that we're facing today, post 9/11. But first, let's take a look at the case of the top British military police officer. He was, in fact, the senior officer in British forces in Iraq, responsible for investigation of complaints against British troops. Now, there have been fresh revelations in that case. We'll get to those in a moment. But let's take a look first at some of the calculated disinformation which is coming out of the British media. One headline, for example, from The Guardian: British forces feel pressure from abuse claims. And we have a similar tale coming out from the Times Online and also the Independent. Well, why the sudden concern over the mental health of British forces in Iraq? All part of, as I say, a calculated disinformation campaign. Captain Ken Masters was found hanged on Saturday evening in the British Army camp in Basra. Now, the camp was subsequently, immediately thereafter, locked down. A no-movement order was issued, and all forces were confined to barracks, and a search, we are told, was conducted. So it sounds like there was quite a reaction to the sudden discovery of Captain Ken Masters hanged to death. Now, we posted about this in my.breakfornews.com, describing the suspicious death of top military cop in Basra, Iraq, and it was suspicious at the time, because he was responsible not only for investigating abuse claims against British forces, but also responsible for investigating the issue of the arrest and subsequent release of two SAS men who were, according to those who arrested them in Iraq, in possession of bomb-making equipment, and they suspected them of planting bombs. And just a couple of days before Captain Masters' untimely demise, General Sir Michael Jackson, Chief of the General Staff, arrived in Basra to deal with the issue. I'm sure many people will be suspecting that British forces at the highest level decided to deal with the issue of whatever was going on with Captain Masters and deal with it permanently. So that was the situation as of Monday, when we were reporting our suspicions about what had gone on and equating it to the David Kelly affair. That's the weapons inspector who was famously suicided in Great Britain after he hit the media spotlight. Now, another story that has come out in relation to these events in the last week or so is that the bombs and firing devices used in ambushes in Iraq were initially created in the early 1990s by none other than the United Kingdom Security Service, MI5. You might ask, what were MI5 doing developing bombing and firing device tactics and techniques? Well, according to the story, they had developed them in order to try and pass them on to the Irish Republican Army, who were conducting a terrorism campaign against the British government in Northern Ireland. The thinking was that if they could supply the Irish Republican Army with these devices, they would then know what kind of devices were in use by the IRA. They would know because they'd provided them with those devices, and so they'd be in a better position to stop potential bombing attacks. However, all of that seemed to have gone awry, according to the reports, and this technology ended up in the hands of the IRA. So let's track back, then, to the beginning of that story. The devices used in Iraq have been found to have been developed by the United Kingdom Security Service, MI5. And we have two SAS persons arrested in Iraq and charged with the planting of bombs by local Iraqi forces. You can see the kind of potential political dynamite that is involved in these incidents, and that is why we had our suspicions. Now, our suspicions have not been eased in the meantime. Indeed, our suspicions have been greatly increased by the Daily Mirror's reporting that Captain Masters was due to go home from Iraq within the next 2 weeks. Now, that has two implications straight away. One is, could he not hang on two more weeks? Whatever pressures he was allegedly under, whatever pressures all British forces are allegedly under in Iraq, could he not have waited 2 weeks, 2 weeks more, and he would be out of the place? 2 weeks more, he would be back home with his wife and children. But no. And the other implication of the 2 weeks is that in 2 weeks, he would be in a position to be out of the theatre of war, back in the United Kingdom, and therefore potentially able to discuss concerns he might have about what was going on in Iraq with others back home, either friends, family, and or members of the media. We'll keep you posted on any more developments in that issue. I don't think there is going to be much more. The next stage is that the death will be investigated by the very military police that Captain Masters had headed up before his death, and that doesn't inspire confidence. And there's every indication that what we're dealing with here is, like in the case of David Kelly, we're dealing with somebody who had an attack of something resembling conscience and became an impediment that needed to be permanently removed. Okay, let's get on to the main theme of this edition of The Next Level. And you're very welcome back. This is The Next Level on breakfornews.com. Now, did you ever wonder, how did we get into the kind of mess that we're in these days, post 9/11, with an openly fascist government in the United States, which seems to be able to dispense with elections at will and wage war at will? Well, the roots of it all go quite some way back. But let's kick off by taking a look at the expression NWO, which stands for, as many of you know, New World Order. And I'd like to thank one listener who shall remain nameless for helping me to focus my thoughts in this area. Yep, New World Order, it's almost a cliche at this point. I mean, it's been used by everybody from George Bush Sr. to Alex Jones. It is at times confusing label, because New World Order, who are they exactly? Is it just George Bush, or is it George Bush and the globalists, or is it George Bush and the globalists and the Democrats and John Kerry and Bill Clinton, or is it the Rockefellers, or is it the Rothschilds, or who the hell is it? And it's quite a confusing label, which tends to make you go round and round in circles. But military-industrial complex, well, now we know what we're talking about. Now we know what we're dealing with in terms of military-industrial complex, because we see the effects of the military-industrial complex around the world, in particular the largest military-industrial complex on the planet, that of the United States. And we see the military-industrial complex as the greatest beneficiary of 9/11. We see that because the immediate action by the US government after 9/11 was to vastly increase the military budget of the United States. So the question is this: if they're benefiting so much from what's going on right now, Are they, in fact, the people that we're dealing with? Is all of this, in fact, a creation of the military-industrial complex being run by the military-industrial complex? I'm not saying that there's nobody involved in this, but let's say a handful of defense contractors in the United States. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there is a nexus of power, and that at the center of that nexus of power is the military-industrial complex, particularly that of the United States. But remembering, as ever, that when we're talking about the United States in terms of foreign policy, we're talking about US and UK acting as one. And I'll put this to you, that whoever it was who was running things when these guys took over is whoever's running it right now. I believe that whatever group grabbed hold of the reins of the state and are now using it for their own ends, that their rise to power was a permanent one. And when they got to power, they've been in power and in the positions of power ever since. So could that be the military-industrial complex? And I believe it certainly could. And I think there's one term that's going to help us get a focus on that. That term is shock and awe. Now, you're aware of shock and awe as a military tactic. It was used with great acclaim by the US media, used in the assault on Baghdad. The idea was to so overwhelm a civilian population as to render resistance impossible. In other words, shock and awe really is something which has a psychological dimension as well as a military dimension. The tactic of shock and awe isn't a new one. It goes right back to the days at the end of World War II, which saw the explosion of two nuclear devices over Japan. That, my dear friends, that was when these guys took over. That was their first use of shock and awe. They were using it as a statement of global domination. They were using it as an implicit threat to anybody who attempted to oppose them. And they were using it with an absolute disregard for civilian casualties. So what was really going on there then? Well, here's an interesting concept for you. I do not buy that there was a race between Hitler's scientists and US scientists and Russian scientists to see who could get the atomic bomb first. I don't buy that. I think that the atomic bomb was a construction of the military-industrial complex, which took over when it exploded those devices and which is still in power today. I believe they created the so-called race to see who would get the bomb because it justified their embracing of the technology. See, we had no choice. I mean, if we didn't do it, the Russians were going to do it. I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. I think that they came up with it and they laid the groundwork in order to justify the use. So I'm taking the roots of this military-industrial complex back to that time, to that day, and taking a look at geostrategic issues. What was going on then in World War II? What was the actual war all about? Well, one thing you notice is that it devastated Europe and it created the window of opportunity into which the United States stepped. Because lacking a competitor on the industrial scene, having devastated Europe, it was now in a position to take over the economic leadership of the world. And if these guys are capable of organizing World War II, then you bet they're capable of organizing what's going on right now. And that's an awesome concept for those of us who have accepted the handed-down history to realize that, in fact, World War II was an entirely orchestrated event. And all of that, of course, has implications for what's going on today. Because today we see the creation of an EU superstate, pushed forward by who? Well, pushed forward principally by the German Bundesbank, in terms of they being the guys coming up with the money to fund all this and to fund the dramatic extension of the European Economic Trading Unit, which it originally started out as, into this new European superstate encompassing many countries in Eastern Europe. So Germany has played a role in pushing that forward. Germany, of course, with its great numbers of US troops stationed there in bases to defend them against the Russians, if you buy that one. I mean, if you're buying into this at all, if you're accepting this viewpoint at all, you realize that much of these so-called confrontations are completely staged and that the Berlin Wall fell at the time it did because it was suitable timing for the Berlin Wall to fall. And so that was orchestrated. Because with the Berlin Wall down, then the eastward march of the European Union could begin in earnest. And we could dispense with the holding pattern which had been in place since World War II. And of course, we've got to ask ourselves the question then, that German commitment to an EU super state, what has turned into an EU super state, was that their own bright idea? Or, as you might well argue, that if it was the United States which ended up conquering Germany, which ended up administering Germany, you see what's going on in Iraq right now, how the occupying power basically has the ability to install whoever it wants to be the new political leadership of a country. Well, then, I put it to you that they installed exactly who they wanted to be the political leadership of Germany. And I would also put it to you that you could interpret what's going on with the EU as an attempt to add another 20, 25, or whatever it is, countries as states to the new global United States. The EU is a poisoned chalice. It is presented to the population of the European Union and to the world as, hey, a good counterweight to the power of the United States. But at the end of the day, it is in fact a creation of the United States. And what you're seeing is the subsumation of Europe into a new United States of America and Europe. And you know that it is a matter of public record right now that NATO is assisting in the training of security forces in Iraq. You know that the natural progression for these occupations, takeovers, is that the poor GIs are sent in first to do all the slog work, and after they've taken the casualties and subdued the local elements, then the NATO forces are sent in, and then when they're finished, you probably get UN forces sent in for, as they say, peacekeeping missions. So that's the kind of track that we're taking through history since 1945. And I'm saying to you that the reason that we're in so much trouble right now is because we've been in trouble since 1945. Since these people first deployed their psychological warfare tactic of shock and awe in the nuclear explosions of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That, of course, finds its echoes in 9/11, another psychological operation. Psychological manipulation of the populations of the Western world is the hallmark of these people. It's how they work, because this contrived race for global dominance between the United States and Russia was responsible for the Cold War era, which produced the atomic alerts and the nuclear arms crisis in which Kennedy was involved, which brought the world, as they said, to the brink of destruction. Another psychological operation, as was the whole of the Red Scare stuff and the nuclear drills with kids getting the alarm bells going off and running out to their shelters, and the government circulating booklets advising you what to do in the event of a nuclear attack, etc., etc. You know, that's the one interesting thing about 9/11, is that because of its transparent psychological warfare aspects, that it enables you to look back in history and realize that, hey, this psychological warfare has been going on forever. Like I say, that's how these people do business, using shock and awe tactics. One of the most astounding events was the death of a single individual, but in terms of shock and awe, it produced a huge worldwide shock and awe, was the assassination of JFK. And taking a psychological warfare view of what happened in the JFK case, you could argue that the prime benefit to them was psychological warfare. So what they needed was a charismatic leader they could wipe out. From that point of view, it's worth letting a guy like Kennedy in. Let him get the acclaim. Let him become the hope, the aspiration, the vision of an entire generation. And then snuff the guy out and watch people reel around in despair. And hey, you're home and dry. You've set back the social political agenda by about 20, 30, 40 years by the assassination of a single individual. So you're doing it for psychological reasons. The same logic, for example, would apply to the assassination of John Lennon, who didn't really represent any kind of a political threat. He'd moved largely beyond politics. But what he did offer, again, in that case, like in the Kennedy case, was a sacrificial victim whose assassination would have a huge psychological impact. These people have got the capacity, using these kinds of techniques, to affect the mass consciousness in astonishing ways. And they're doing it right now, all around us. It's just that this time, you guys tuning in right now, you're aware of it. You can see it. You can see through it. But prior to this, for years, these guys have been getting away with nothing less than mass murder, and they've been using psychological tactics to do so. We'll develop those issues in just a moment. You are on The Next Level on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
I take a few slugs and a kiss, so don't come back at you. You know I'm gonna catch you, cause you know I got no breaks. Doesn't matter how long that it takes, my luck I'm gonna make. I take a few slugs and a kiss, so don't come back wailing, big break sailing. Cause you know I got no breaks, it doesn't matter how long that it takes, my luck I'm gonna make. Give me some of that patience, Lord. I will keep my eye on my goal. Patience. Give me some of that sweet patience, Lord. I will keep my eye on the ball. Well, I'm the shades, the spear and the sword, the words and melody. Oh, what the felony, how the record company pushes this McDonald's music. And all the love, pardon me for those who choose it. Corporations pumping all this money in the pot to keep the real singers far away from the top. So folks, I'm never told what these corporations do. Fucking up the planet, exploiting me and you.
Patience, give me some of that patience, Lord. I will keep my eye on my goal. Patience, give me some of that sweet patience, Lord. I will keep my eye on the ball.
From my room and down the meet, I'm about to kick all your asses. Stick your picture, paint a fight for backstage passes. A warrior coming down the mountain at you. A wood can spring it from the trees to catch. I'm licking my wounds in the wilderness, praying for the warmth of the sun's kiss. My time will come, your race is run, the throne's rightly mine, you greedy swine. Well, to take a few slugs and a kiss, turn on home and back, wailing, big right sailing. Cause you know I've got no break, it doesn't matter how long that it takes, my luck I'm gonna make.
Patience, give me some of that sweet patience, Lord. I will keep my eye on my goal. Yeah, patience. Give me some of that sweet patience, Lord. And I'll keep my eye on the ball.
And you're very welcome back. This is The Next Level on breakfornews.com. We're taking a look at the military-industrial complex as a core component of the so-called New World Order. By the 60s, late 60s, there was a reassertion needed, some kind of reassertion of the global power of this empire. It was, after all, in certain difficulties, what with the counterculture backlash against, for example, its big imperial venture abroad in the Vietnam War. And the really fortunate thing was that the funding necessary to stage another spectacular could be extracted from the people once again by using the Russians as the bogeymen. So I'm not buying that it was a race between the Russians and the Americans to develop the nuclear bomb. I think that was a race the Russians were always designed to lose. It was, in fact, an artificial race, a constructed race, in order to persuade the American population to part with the dollars and hand it over to who other than the military-industrial complex. So a process that began in the increase in military spending associated with World War II was never to stop, because it morphed on from the Germans being the enemy to the Russians being the enemy. And then what happened? Well, the Russians headed for space, didn't they? At least that was the line which was being sold to the population of the United States. They were led to believe that the Russians had stolen a march on the United States, and only a vast increase in the military-industrial complex budget of the United States could restore the United States to its role of preeminence. There was a race, announced by, ironically, JFK, to get to the moon first. And I'm saying that that was a contrived race, and it was used as a contrivance to extract the necessary money out of the American population to support such a race. And so we came to that fateful day when we are told somebody set foot on the moon. The most spectacular psychological impact in terms of the assertion of global power since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I don't want to disturb anyone's equilibrium here, but have you ever thought that if you wanted to make such a statement by landing on the moon, make such a global dominance statement, that it wouldn't just be a once-off relying on some grainy photography, that it would be something that would be in your face? What better than to land on this side of the moon? What better than to land where everybody's going to see it in perpetuity, where every guy or girl with a 2-bit telescope is going to be able to point it up towards the moon and see this nice big US flag, and then in perpetuity people would gaze up at the moon and see there the symbol of global dominance of the supreme world power which had landed on that moon. Which raises an interesting question: why would they land on the back of the moon? And something else I'd like you to think about as well is, let's say you were a military commander and you were charged with responsibility for making sure that we pull this off, that we at least appear to have landed somebody on the moon. Even if you could do it, would you? Would you send those astronauts down there onto the surface of the moon and take the risk that they weren't going to be able to take off? Would you take the risk that a piece of tin can is going to come back from the moon and leave two guys behind? Would you take that risk? Or would you fake it and then have the three guys come back as heroes? Would you take that risk? Think about it. If you could fake it, would you take the risk of going for the real thing? In any event, whatever you believe took place or didn't take place on the moon, the effect, once again, was astonishing. It was another assertion of global power by this military-industrial complex. And so we have this chain of purely psychological effects tracking from 1945 with the nuclear explosions through the assassination of Kennedy and the moon landing and on into the 1980s with the assassination of John Lennon. In between those major spectacular events, I think you can see evidence of an ongoing manipulation of the popular consciousness, particularly through the use of television and Hollywood. Hollywood has been used. It's clear to anybody who looks at what's happened over the last 20 years or so that Hollywood has been used to create a warrior class in the United States. God help them. The poor impressionables who end up buying all of the rubbish which is presented to them by the media Hollywood complex, which acts as a propaganda arm of this military-industrial complex. But something we notice post the assassination of John Lennon is we see a change. We see a change in emphasis. No great single spectacular military adventure takes place in that period. Instead, we have a global economic expansion. So it seems that what this military-industrial complex did is continue to build up its military might in the interim, but put on the velvet glove for a while, and at the same time as still ruthlessly supporting the most fascist dictatorial regimes you could find on the planet, also extended its economic reach, used this as primarily an engine for economic growth, extending the range and scope of the empire economically through the dollar. And that's something that's quite easy to do, because if you're controlling the levers of the central banks, then you're controlling whether the good times roll or whether austerity is the measure. And so the good times rolled, and the spigots were opened up fully on the central bank coffers, and the printing presses rolled, and we saw the European Union begin to grow. We saw the Russians disengaged as the ultimate enemy, and we were told that a peace dividend was about to befall the earth, that with the ancient battle between the Russians and the Americans over, that peace would now be the order of the day. And this process, all of this process, culminated in the arrival of one of the most slick operators ever to appear on the political scene, none other than Bill Clinton. Yeah, the same guy who's going around now doing all that disaster relief with George Bush Sr. And yet, despite Slick Willie's appearance on the political scene, and despite the focus on economic issues and who wants to be a millionaire, well, practically everybody does, we saw at the same time, we can now see in retrospect, the groundwork being carefully laid for the remilitarization following the so-called peace dividend, for the creation of the new enemy, as the groundwork was carefully placed in order to create this new enemy, new Islamic enemy. And we also saw the slow wind-up of psychological warfare begin again. We saw it in events such as Waco and in the Oklahoma bombing, both of these taking place in a Clinton Democrat presidency. And we saw the usual political theatre. The Nixon era had its Watergate, and Bill Clinton's era had Monica Gate. And even as we speak, you can see Plame Gate rolling along. And of course, all of those were constructed events, just media circuses designed to use up news space, occupy people's attention, and divert from the real issues. Soap opera at a national political level. And in the case of, let's say, the Monica Gate and perhaps even the Plame Gate in due course, having a global impact as people get sucked into the bullshit that is the theatre of American politics. And so we rolled through Monica Gate and the O.J. Simpson trial, etc., and all of that diversionary stuff, and we inched our way inexorably towards 2001 and 9/11. And the rest is history. Another psychological operation. And we're living with the effects of it today, but nothing new, not if we're taking this context of the use of psyops by these people all the way back. It's just another psyop. And yes, there have been others, minor ones, since then. For example, the Bali bombing and the London bombings, famous, which took place earlier this year. But those events, in terms of global psychological impact, but those events were relatively modest in terms of their psychological ambitions and impact. If we look back at 2005, the two natural events which had the most impact were, of course, the tsunami right at the beginning of the year and Hurricane Katrina. In the case of the tsunami, it was a very fortunate, from a certain point of view, occurrence. It's worth noting that the tsunami, as a side effect, virtually wiped out a local resistance group which was fighting the Indonesian government for their rights to natural gas fields in the area. But of course, the tsunami put an end to all that, just as an ocean away, Hurricane Katrina put an end to the anti-war movement briefly let out of the box by the US media. We've got clear evidence, particularly in relation to the political use of Hurricane Katrina to be, if you like, the second shock and awe event that would strike the USA following 9/11 and would, if you like, act as a demarcation point so that you're supposed to forget everything that happened before Katrina, if you follow me, using a second shock, in this case that of a hurricane, in order to lay down a psychological marker. You can't make quite as clear a case in relation to the tsunami. Obviously, the reasoning behind all of this is that if this group, and we know they were in possession of nuclear power and had developed that technology, have developed it and have deployed that technology, you've got to ask yourself if they have indeed also decoded the technology of Nikola Tesla and are now in possession of space-based scalar weaponry. While you're thinking about that one and trying to make your mind up if indeed it was a scalar attack which produced the tsunami, you might like to consider that image that I'm sure many of you have seen by now, that of Bill Clinton and George Bush Sr., the representatives of the velvet glove and iron fist of the military-industrial complex, parading on the world stage together, supposedly political rivals in the United States coming from different political traditions, but perhaps in a very subtle way, announcing to you that post 9/11, we are now also post-democratic. Well, that's been a very quick thrall through the backstory, the history of the military-industrial complex. And I must say, I find it a lot easier to do analysis in the context of a military-industrial complex analysis instead of a New World Order one. We're now in a process which is ongoing for at least the last 55, going on 60 years. No wonder we're in such trouble. I value your feedback also, and I'd be interested to get that from you to Fintan, F-I-N-T-A-N, at breakfornews.com. And I do read all emails, and as I'm sure you and hope you understand, I don't have the time to respond to all emails because of the pressures of time of getting out shows and somehow managing to make a living. But I do read all of your emails, and I do welcome them, and thank you very much for regular correspondents who tip us off on all sorts of things and give us feedback. Now, if that didn't challenge your existing views enough, we've got some guests coming on in the very near future who are going to challenge them some more, and then some. And I hope you can join me for that. But in the meantime, for Break for News, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.